From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Pritzker Pavilion at Millennium Park in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. We are, in fact, gathered today at Millennium Park in downtown Chicago, and we are here to celebrate our hometown, Chicago, Illinois. Other cities may have the financial titans or the movie stars or those mountains and oceans we've heard are somewhat impressive to look at, but we have got something better. We have got a guy who will fly to your city, wherever you are, and indict your sorry behind. I'm talking, of course, about the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois and one-time special counsel in the Valerie Plame case, Mr. Patrick Fitzgerald. He will be making a rare public appearance, one of the first after the end of the Scooter Libby case, on our show when he comes to play Not My Job later on. But first, it is your turn, of course. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm Bill from Harper's Ferry, West Virginia.
Hey, how are things at Harper's Ferry?
Oh, lovely.
It's lovely. Okay, well, that's good. Well, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to writer, performer, and author of the novel Schrodinger's Ball, Mr. Adam Felber, right there.
Hello.
Hello.
Also say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Roxanne.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you all.
And lastly, say hello to a humorist and the author of the book, Long Time Leaving, a Dispatches from Up South, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr. Well, Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Now, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle right now is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
Wow, thank you.
Isn't it? That's Southern manners. He hasn't even won yet. He's thanking. All right, here we go. Here is your first quote.
I haven't had a pajama party or a sleepover in a long time. It'll be a good experience.
Now, that was Nebraska Senator Ben Nelson. Earlier this week, he was expressing his joyful anticipation over what big event in the Senate?
The filibuster.
Right, the all-night filibuster. Very good. Now, the point of the all-night filibuster was, in fact, to force the Republicans to actually appear for quorum calls and vote against cloture on the debate over the Defense Department reauthorization, specifically the amendment over Iraq withdrawal. And if that makes you confused and unhappy and disoriented, well, now you know how 95-year-old Senator Robert Byrd felt at 3 a.m. Wednesday morning. Now, there was a lot of complaining about the event from both parties. We thought we'd get some hints on how to improve it for next time. Joining us now is Julie Lavender, author of Sleepovers for Kids, Fun Activities, Themes, and Ideas for Overnight Parties for Boys or Girls. Ms. Lavender, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Hello.
Hello, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
So the Senate had their big all-night party. It didn't go so well. They were complaining and cranky. Morning roll around. We're wondering, so what would your advice be the next time they want to have a mixed gender sleepover in the Senate?
Well, now, our church occasionally has lock-ins for our youth, and the way our youth minister handles this is that he keeps them so busy with games, activities, and scavenger hunts that they just really don't have time to sleep or get cranky.
Really? Games, activities, and scavenger hunts?
That's right.
Okay.
You call them lock-ins? Is that?
Yes, we call them lock-ins.
What are
Or occasionally they call them lockouts, and then they just keep them so busy all night long they never even light anywhere for any amount of time.
All right. You've got 100 senators. They're all locked in the Senate chambers. What kind of games and activities would you suggest for them?
Well, they need something to keep them moving, because if you ever settle down, that's when you're going to realize just how sleepy you are. So
that's
for a good
a
sleepover, I recommend having activities to last all night long and keep them busy. So I think one fun activity is, you know, you could have a beach party kind of theme.
Oh, yeah.
And grab a beach volleyball.
Sure.
And stack up the, stretch out the cots that have been brought in. You could even spread beach towels across them for effect. And let that be your net. And then play volleyball. It could even be the Republicans against the Democrats, and you could see who lasts the longest.
I can't believe Ted Kennedy didn't suggest that.
I know.
Well, what if some bad boys from a rival Senate come up on their motorcycles and want to start fights?
You mean like from Canada?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's why you lock the doors.
Lock them in.
Julie Lavender is the author of Sleepovers for Kids, Fun Activities, Themes, and Ideas for Overnight Parties for Boys or Girls. Thank you so much, and we'll be sure to check with you in time for the next filibuster.
I'll be available.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Lavender. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Roxanne, you were there. Was it all for show? Did it have any point?
Listen, anytime you have senators in beds and no hookers, I'm happy.
There you go. It's an improvement. Bill, you still with us?
Yes, sir. I sure am.
All right, sir. Here is your next quote.
Oh, as it turns out, they're not on the run.
That was New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd. She was giving a pithy, brief summary of the National Intelligence Estimate. Who, it turns out, is not on the run, but doing just fine. Thank you very much.
Al-Qaeda.
Exactly. Al-Qaeda. Remember, well,
who was that hand for?
No, they're not. They're applauding for Bill. They're applauding.
Okay, yeah.
Remember, we know. Yeah. Remember the National Intelligence Estimate from the summer of 01, the one titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike America? Well, the good news is that this summer they saved a lot on printing by just handing it out again. The latest National Intelligence Estimate says that Al-Qaeda is as strong as it ever was. They credit the organization's resurgence to a low-carb diet and lots of Pilates classes in their caves. Oh, and the fact that we invaded Iraq.
Oh, okay.
When asked about this at a press briefing, the president's Homeland Security Advisor, Fran Townsend, said, sure, when you, quote, harass Al-Qaeda, as we're doing in Afghanistan and Iraq, and when you, quote, poke them, of course they're going to poke back. The White House then announced their new initiative. Instead of just harassing and poking Al-Qaeda, now we're going to go further. We're going to annoy and infuriate them. How are we going to do that? We're going to force them to attend White House press briefings. All right, Bill, here is your last quote.
Yes, sir.
For those people who say, come on, Jim, how does it end? It's like parents who say, there's a surprise gift for you in the next room. It's a bicycle.
That was British actor Jim Dale explaining why he was refusing to talk despite being one of the first people to know how what ends.
The Harry Potter book.
Of course, the Harry Potter books. Very good. Jim Dale, of course, is the man who became famous. We hope for his sake rich, doing the popular audiobooks of all the Harry Potter series. And he got to find out how the last book in the series, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, ends when he read the whole thing out loud into a microphone. Now, of course, now that the book is out, everybody agrees the ending, just terrific. When Ginny and Cho Chang drive a Cadillac convertible right over into the Grand Canyon. Or much to the chagrin of Joey, Hermione decides to move in with Ross. That was moving.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait.
But my favorite part, the most satisfying part, is when Harry Potter finally whacks Tony Soprano.
I just love that moment at the very end when he wakes up in bed with Suzanne Plachet.
Carl, how did Bill do in our quiz?
Bill had a great game, Peter. He had 3 correct answers. So, Bill, you win our prize. Congratulations.
Well
thank
done.
You.
Bill, thank you.
Thank you, sir. It was a pleasure.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roxanne, tensions continue to rise in the Middle East, of course. This week, the government of Iran arrested 14 accusing them of being foreign spies.
It's so hard to keep track of their arrests. It's not going to be anything obvious, so it's going to be popcorn salesmen.
Hmm. Where did you come up with that? Do you personally distrust popcorn salesmen? Do people come to your house, Roxanne, claiming to want to sell you popcorn? Because let me tell you, they just sell it down to the grocery store. I don't think they're telling you the truth.
But if your only selection criteria was not obvious, it was a smashing success of a guess.
They always say it's real butter, and it never is. But go ahead. Yeah, I need a hint.
It is true. I mean, just to give the Iranians credit, one of these was named Rocky and was wearing suspicious-looking flying goggles.
Squirrels?
Yes, 14 squirrels were arrested in Iran on charges of espionage. The official Iranian news agency reported, and I quote, "In recent weeks, intelligence operatives have arrested 14 squirrels within Iran's borders. The squirrels were carrying spy gear of foreign agencies and were stopped before they could act, thanks to the alertness of our intelligence services," unquote. Soon after, back at the White House, Dick Cheney turned to the president and said, "Okay, we tried your idea. Now let me get back to work."
Were these flying squirrels?
These were not flying squirrels.
Well, that's what I kept telling Dick. They need to be flying squirrels.
Are we sure they were squirrels?
What do you think they might have been?
It could have been little people.
In squirrel costumes?
In squirrel suits, yeah. We don't know how big they were.
That's true. We do have Navy SEALs. Why not Navy squirrels?
Oh, that's right. Okay.
What an agent, what a squirrel. He's got the country in a whirl. What's his name?
Shh, secret squirrel.
He's got tricks up his sleeve. Most bad guys won't believe. A bulletproof coat.
Thank you, everybody. Right now it is time for the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Jennifer Page in Boston, Massachusetts.
Hey, how are things in Boston?
Things are great, thanks. It's a beautiful time of year in New England.
It's a great time. The Red Sox are still winning, so everything's all right.
Yep, we're happy.
You're happy. Well, welcome to the show, Jennifer. Carl Castle right here is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
Here is your first limerick.
The button's D6, I do stab. So some enzymes I'm able to grab. For late-night blood tests, this machine is the best. It is vending supplies in our
lab?
Yes, in the lab. Be careful getting a snack at the Oregon Health and Science University, right next to the typical Coke and Pepsi machines, a new vending machine for scientists that dispenses ice-cold packets of various bacteria, proteins, and enzymes. The machines are hit with researchers because you never know when you get a hankering for E. coli at 3 in the morning.
Really? Right next to the other vending machines?
Yeah, right next to them. There have been the typical vending machine problems, endless scrambling for change, hitting the wrong button, ending up with a bag of bugles instead of an RNA ladder, and of course the constant fear of having a pouch of Ebola virus snagged in the dispensing coil. Mm-hmm. All right, here is your next limerick.
Sucked a cut and then found blood tastes sweet? Well, lay off of that savory treat. If the law said okay, FDA says no way. They'd call human flesh unfit to
eat.
Exactly right. Bad news, cannibals. That pleasingly plump guy next to you in the bus may look mouth-watering good, but he's actually chock full of hazardous chemicals. This is disappointing to some. According to health expert Randall Fitzgerald, if cannibalism were legal in this country and our flesh was up for review by the FDA, we would all fail the inspection.
Oh, probably not right now.
Well, on the other hand, exactly. I guess not. But on the other hand, if cannibalism were legal, programming on the Food Network would be a hell of a lot more exciting. Mm. Very good. Here is your last limerick.
Your toddler is really a pain. Here, take this muzzle and chain. The pilot's with us, so don't make a fuss. You'll get your kid kicked off this
plane.
Right. Mm. Parents across the country were up in arms this week over the story of Garen Penland, a 19-month-old who was booted from a flight after repeatedly saying, "Bye-bye, plane! Bye-bye, plane!" after the flight attendant told him to be quiet. Penland and his mother appeared live on Good Morning America for an interview with Diane Sawyer to show the world just what kind of angel Garen really is, and boy, did he show them. He squirmed in his mother's arms. He climbed on the set. He attempted to put Sawyer's pen in his own eye. And he was finally scooped up and hauled off the set so that his mother could complete the interview in peace. His mother said apologetically, he wasn't quite that adventurous on the plane.
I've sat next to that kid so many times. It's just not funny anymore.
Carl, how did Jennifer do in our quiz?
Well, Jennifer, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done, Jennifer. Congratulations. And now the game where we ask interesting people about things they're just not interested in. It's called Not My Job. Patrick Fitzgerald is the United States Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, and he's been responsible for a number of high-profile prosecutions, including the convictions of former Illinois Governor George Ryan and, just last week, former press baron Conrad Black. And he did all this while zipping back and forth to Washington, where he won a conviction against Scooter Libby in the case arising from the Valerie Plame leak. Now, Mr. Fitzgerald does not make many public statements about his work or his life, so we are proud and somewhat amazed to welcome Chicago's own Patrick Fitzgerald to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So it's great to have you here.
Thanks.
So who leaked Valerie Plame's name? Come on. No, I know. You're not going to say. You're not going to say. My first question.
Do you think you're going to catch him off balance on that?
No. I wasn't expecting that.
No.
We know that you can't and would even prefer not to speak about your work. But I have to ask you one question. What in the world are you doing here? Because you don't actually do a lot of press, but you're here. We're delighted. But what made you decide to join us?
Literally, I was trying to get tickets to the show. I got them.
You got
them? Yeah.
But
I've been asking myself that question recently.
I imagine. All of a sudden, it's
very
like,
recently.
What am I doing here? Can you rethink it? So you live in the city here in Chicago.
Yes.
You moved here from New York.
Yes.
And you like it here.
A lot.
You live in the north side, I'm told. Out there in
generally.
One of our neighborhoods. One of our neighborhoods. And you work downtown.
Yes.
Right. So let me ask you, how do you feel about commuting?
I don't mind driving.
No. There you go. slightly more seriously, you have been involved in some very high-profile cases. And because of that, people have said things about you. And I know from previous statements that you don't respond to the various accusations or characterizations, but does it bother you ever, you know, to turn on the TV and see people who don't know you saying things about you?
Less than you think. If you feel comfortable that you work with people and you make a common judgment and you rely upon a lot of other people who make a judgment as to what to do, if you feel comfortable you've done it, then you're going to get credit and blame for things you shouldn't get credit for and blame you shouldn't get blamed for. You just accept it.
That's remarkably accepting. I mean, I couldn't do it. I'd be calling up those guys on Fox News and Friends and yelling back, I guess, if it were up to me. Your background is, shall we say, not the same as many of your defendants. You grew up in Flatbush in Brooklyn.
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, you're a son of a doorman, and you worked as one yourself for a while.
Yes.
Is that how you put yourself through college, the doorman job?
I worked more as a janitor. I did a summer as a doorman, and I think being a janitor is easier.
You just really?
Mop the floor, and you don't have to worry about people being weird. Which tenants in buildings can be weird.
Did working as a doorman sort of maybe help you eventually deal with abuse from wealthy people who don't know you?
It was an interesting experience. It was fun. But you had people calling up on the 4th of July complaining about fireworks. And you're the doorman. Asking you to stop them. And you said yes, and you hung up.
You have a reputation as being a workaholic. Is this fair, do you think?
No, I think it's exaggerated.
You do?
Yes.
Well, let's face it. If you're prosecuting Conrad Black here in Chicago, George Ryan here in Chicago, a massive mafia case here in Chicago, and you're pursuing the Scooter Libby case as a special prosecutor, clearly you're not taking a lot of time to flip through the cable channels.
There's 140 attorneys in the office, and there's 300 staff, and so I get a lot of credit for what other people do, and people think I do a lot more than I
do. All right, I understand.
But keep that between us.
Your testimony, sir, is that you're not a workaholic. All right?
Okay.
Let me ask you then.
And he has prepared an extensive brief detailing.
I know.
The ways in which he is not a workaholic.
Let me ask you then. Describe some of the things you do with your capacious leisure time, then. If you will, for the court.
I like to run.
You like to run. You're a runner.
Yes.
you're not actually pursuing felons when you're doing this. It's purely a...
No one in front of me.
No one in front of you. You're just running. Okay, so you run.
Except other runners who are faster.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So you run.
Yes.
We heard a story about you. We were looking around, seeing what we could find about you, and we heard a story that once you were challenged, either by your own conscience or by friends, that you never cook at home because you're always so busy. And the story is that you said, well, I'm going to make a lasagna. And you took the lasagna, and you made it, and you put it in the oven, and then somebody committed a crime somewhere or something, and you had to go take care of it, and you forgot about the lasagna for 3 months. Mm.
With the oven on?
Is that story true?
I made 6 lasagnas at once.
Okay.
Because it was the first time I made lasagna, so I wanted to be efficient.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, man.
And I ate a little of the lasagna.
Yeah.
And then no crime happened. I just forgot about it. And 3 months later, I thought about, I don't remember taking that tray of lasagna, the last one, out of the oven. And it was still there. And I didn't taste it.
Okay. So.
Wait, Peter, I have to ask a question because you're being really delicate here.
Oh.
Well, before you were a very special prosecutor, you were the Washington Post very special prosecutor. And all these girls were madly in love with you, are madly in love with you. And then I think people said you were one of the sexiest ever men. Is that correct?
That would not just be people like people in the street. That would be People magazine.
So I want to know, have you gotten marriage proposals and letters from people that you've never met stalking you?
What's this in your notes here, Roxanne? I mean, over and over again, Mrs. Roxanne Fitzgerald.
I want to know what effect this has had on your personal life.
It means I get email from my college roommates making fun of me constantly about how you make People magazine, there were 6 guys in the room group, and you came in 7th in the room group. And so they're trying to figure out where they fit in. So it's mostly abuse. Mostly abuse.
Before we play the quiz, we have one more question for you. When our colleagues at NPR learned that you were going to be in the show this week, one of them in particular, not very pleased, Nina Totenberg, our legal correspondent, she had one question she's dying to ask you. Here she is.
Fitzgerald, what are you doing at Millennium Park? I sat through the Libby trial for 2 months. I'm the person who gave up paid speaking engagements so I could go to your lousy trial and not see Dick Cheney testify. And now you're giving an interview to these jerks?
I thought if I went for 3 for 3 to the quiz, I'd get Nina Totenberg on my voice.
There you go. I have a feeling I think Nina would do that for another movie. Well, Patrick Fitzgerald, we have asked you here to play a game we are calling...
We are so not going to ask you any questions about Scooter Libby.
You probably know more about Scooter Libby than any person alive, including Scooter Libby and his mother, even more than Dick Cheney. So we are not going to ask you about him, no. This is called Not My Job. So we have 3 questions about other things entirely. Answer 2 out of 3 of the questions, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Get 1 or none right, you'll lose. But if that seems overly harsh, I'm sure the president will step in. Carl, for whom is U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald playing?
Peter, he is playing for Bud Wilson of Elgin, Illinois.
All right, the first question, not about Scooter Libby. The Segway scooter. This computerized 2-wheeled personal transporter was supposed to transform our economy and the way cities are designed. Instead, it has become, at least in terms of what it does for your image, a $5,000 spinning propeller beanie. But the Segway is not done yet. Even as we speak, engineers out there somewhere are trying to do what with it? A, turn one upside down, attach a bucket of baseballs to the top, and make a reliable and self-righting pitching machine. B, equip them with remote control and a camera so stores can use it to deliver groceries and pizza. Or C, mount guns and robot brains on them and send them into battle.
I think I'll go with C.
You're going to go with C?
Yes.
The Segway Warriors.
Yes.
You're right. The Warrior Segway could happen if a project sponsored by the Defense Department called the Segway Robotic Mobility Platform ever comes to fruition. Very good. Your next question. The stage manager on The Muppet Show was, of course, Scooter the Muppet. And unlike other Muppets, Scooter wasn't quite a monster, wasn't quite human. In an insider account of The Muppets, what did Scooter himself say about his own parentage? Was it A, his mother was a parrot, and he has no idea what his father was? Mm-hmm. B, he was a large potato who was given life magically when somebody gave him a pair of glasses with the eyeballs painted on them? Or C, he was the result of a single night of passion between Kermit and Janice, the hippie lead singer for Dr. Teeth's band.
Okay, I'm off of C.
You're going to go with C.
I'll go with B.
You're going to go with B, that yeah. He was a potato. And they put the glasses on him, and he came to life. No, he was the son of a parrot in an unidentified species, according to a book called Of Men and Muppets. So,
wow.
One Scooter right, one Scooter wrong. You've got one Scooter left. Last question. Phil Rizzuto, the Hall of Fame shortstop for the New York Yankees, was also known as Scooter. When he retired from the game, Rizzuto went on to spend decades with the Yankees as a broadcaster, even though he could be a little unpredictable during the games. For example, he was known for doing what? A, making personal phone calls, including a famous one to his gastroenterologist in front of a live mic. B, bolting from the broadcast booth and the stadium if there were loud thunderclaps, which scared him. Or C, occasionally saying, I have no idea what happened because I wasn't watching, when in fact he hadn't been watching.
I'll go with C.
You're going to go with C, that he said, I haven't. No, actually, it was B.
Oh, thunderclaps.
It was B. He would bolt from the stadium when there were thunderclaps, because he didn't like thunderclaps.
Who knew?
Carl, how did U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald do in our quiz?
Peter, he needed at least two correct answers to win for Bud Wilson, but he had just one correct answer.
Now, I am being told by our producers that an appeal has been filed. And what I am told by our producers is that it is in fact true that Phil Rizzuto used to occasionally put on his scorecard the notation WW, which meant wasn't watching. So by that virtue, Carl, I don't know how to put this. Do you think we should commute a sentence?
Sure.
Yes, absolutely. It's only fair. So, what does that mean?
That means Bud Wilson gets a voice message on his telephone from me.
Congratulations. Patrick Fitzgerald is the U.S. attorney representing the Northern District of Illinois. He has successfully prosecuted cases against governors, mobsters, media bigwigs, and, of course, White House insiders with odd nicknames. Patrick Fitzgerald, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Woo!
In just a minute, our panelists put on suntan lotion and drink bug juice as they go to camp in our Bluff the Listener game. But first, some more questions for you, panel, from the week's news. Roy, pollsters are constantly trying to find out not so much what people think about the presidential candidates, but how they feel about them. Mm. One polling firm found out that Democratic candidate John Edwards reminds voters of what iconic, beloved character?
Huckleberry Hound, or something.
That'd be good.
I better give you a hint. I mean, it seems kind of surprising, but when you think about it, like, well, Edwards is sort of our little buddy.
Our little buddy? Tinkerbell. No, I don't know. Our little buddy?
Yeah, you just want to hit him with a hat, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
John Edwards is, of course, running for the presidency again. You could say he's in the middle of his second 3-hour tour.
You can't hint broader than that, can
you? No, that's about it.
Yeah, that's about all you can do.
His second, third hour tour?
Yeah, three hour tour. I'll throw it open. Adam.
Gilligan.
Gilligan. Oh, John Gilligan. Edwards. Oh, okay. In the minds of the voters equals three Gilligan of tour. Gilligan's Island. Okay. JWT, it's a company that keeps track of consumer trends. They asked 681 voting-age Americans to compare the six leading presidential candidates to the cast of Gilligan's Island.
Huh.
John Edwards reminded them of the hapless yet adorable Gilligan. Hillary Clinton, Mrs. Howell.
That hurts.
It does hurt. It does hurt. Rudolph Giuliani was the skipper, which is a kind of frightening thought. John McCain, of course, was the crazy guest star last seen slowly sinking into the lagoon. Adam, a tourist visiting the holy city of Varanasi in India, was robbed and filed a former complaint to police. As a result, the city's police force has mobilized and is now searching for a rogue what?
Squirrel.
Yes. No.
What?
No, they're in Iran.
Oh. he was robbed in a holy city, and now the police are searching for a rogue thing that is not just a crook.
Right.
It's a crook.
It's a crook. We didn't say crook. It wasn't a crook.
It's a crooked monkey.
It is.
It is.
It is. Yeah. In the Varanasi criminal justice system, there are two separate yet equally important groups. The police, who investigate monkey crimes, and the district attorneys, who prosecute the monkeys. This is their story. A South Korean tourist says he opened his window to get some fresh air when a monkey sprang into his room, grabbed his glasses, took off. The man filed a report with local police, as required by his traveler's insurance, and now Varanasi's finest are on the case. After an APB, part of the glasses frame was recovered near the hotel, and the tourist was invited to view a lineup featuring a macaque, a howler, a spider monkey, and a tourist from New Jersey with distressingly hairy arms. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's time to play the game where our panelists lie to you. Give us a call, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Eric Cunningham calling from Honolulu, Hawaii.
Hey, how are things in Honolulu?
Well, nice and warm, but that doesn't sound so cool anymore because warm everywhere.
Exactly. Eric, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Eric's topic?
Hello, mother. Ooh. Hello, father.
Summer camp ain't what it used to be. For once, we used to just enjoy ourselves by making lanyards and putting our bunkmates' hands in warm water while they slept. Campers these days are enjoying all kinds of specialized learning environments. This week, we read about a camp that promises to mold young minds in a rather surprising way. Our panelists are each going to tell you three stories about unique summer camps. Choose the true story. You will win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. First up, let's hear from Mr. Adam Felber.
Remember how every year there was that one kid who was sent away to that special camp? Grown-ups had other names for it, but we knew it was really Fat Camp. Well, now a new generation of kids will see their challenged peers sent off to what I am sure they are going to cruelly refer to as Ugly Camp. That's right, Camp Bel-Em, outside of Beverly Hills, has been created for the cosmetically challenged child. Whether your kid is ill-favored, or messy, or just a terrible dresser, Camp Bel-Em offers a complete program of practical instruction, fashion, hygiene, and kitty spa treatments. Director and former model Julia Cronin promises the difference will wow your child's peers come September and give them the social boost they need. No word if there's a camp song yet, but may I suggest, oh, come all ye awkward bucktooth or be pimpled, come ye, oh, come ye to Camp Bel-Em.
Well done. Camp Bel-Em, where you send your child to be more beautiful. Your next story of a great new summer camp comes from Roxanne Roberts.
After Susan Portman inherited her grandparents' campground in western Massachusetts, she asked her two teenage sons to design their perfect summer camp. The result? Camp Slack,
a two-week retreat for overachieving, overscheduled, overstressed teens. The all-boys camp, which celebrates your inner slacker, has only three rules: no booze, drugs, or porn, but no wake-up calls, nature hikes, campfires, or SAT prep. Instead, there's Xboxes, iPods, poker tournaments, pro wrestling marathons, Wi-Fi, 24-hour junk food, and a Jessica Alba film festival. To Portman's shock, every $1,000 a week slot was snapped up 3 weeks after launching the camp's website in March. Quote, "Kids are sick of parents nagging them to do something in the summer," Portman told the Boston Globe, "and parents are sick of watching their kids slack off, so they pay me to do it."
A camp for what boys really want to do all summer. And last story, and lastly, let's hear a story of a great summer camp from Roy Blunt.
It's not easy being a hockey parent, shivering and feeling your feet growing numb at 6 a.m. as you pretend to take an enthusiastic interest in kids milling about on the ice. And all your kid is into is skating and flipping the puck around? What kind of parent wouldn't send that child to Derek Boogaard's fighting camp? In 2 years in the National Hockey League, Boogaard has cold-cocked so many opponents that he's earned the nickname of Boogeyman. Now he's giving back. For only $40, your brawling impaired youngster can come to Regina, Saskatchewan for Boogaard's one-day crash course in grabbing and punching. Critics call it goon school, but as one father whose kid took the course puts it, youth hockey often puts too much emphasis on fun and equity and a lot of extra be nice type of hockey. At the peewee age, kids have to start toughening up. And when they get a little older and learn to drive and start thinking NASCAR, they can go to fiery collision camp.
All right, these are your choices. Let's assume, sir, that you are a concerned parent. You want to find something for your kid to do the rest of the summer. You can send them to either Camp Bel Am near Beverly Hills, where they can learn to be beautiful, from Adam Felber. A camp described by Roxanne Roberts where they get to do exactly what they want to do all summer, i.e. nothing useful. Or from Roy Blunt Jr., a camp where they get to go and learn to fight like a hockey player. Which of these is the real summer experience awaiting your child? More.
Well, having met a few hockey fans in my life, I think Roy's story about the hockey fighting camp sounds like the right one.
You're going to pick Roy's story of the hockey fighting camp.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we actually spoke to an expert on this topic to get his opinion on this learning experience.
You don't have to fight to be a tough hockey player. And there's many hockey players in the National Hockey League that are tough hockey players, and I think this is ridiculous, teaching these kids how to fight.
That was Steve Carlson, who was one of the original Hansen brothers from the movie Slapshot, discussing what skills hockey camps should be teaching kids. You're right, Eric. The true story was Roy's. You've earned a point for him. And, more to the point, you, sir, have won our prize, Carl's Voice on Your Home Answering Machine. Congratulations.
Wonderful.
Well done. Time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Roxanne Roberts and Adam Felber each has 3 points. Roy Blunt Jr. has 2.
So, Roy, you are in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Asbestos was found in the dust that settled after an 83-year-old steam pipe burst in blank.
New York City.
In Manhattan, right. Tuesday's plane crash was the worst ever in blank.
Brazil.
Right. On Thursday, a judge dismissed a lawsuit brought against the Bush administration by former CIA operative blank.
Valerie Plame.
Right. China this week accused foreign media outlets of raising unnecessary fears about that country's blanks.
exports, toothpaste, stuff like that.
Well, yeah, food products specifically. Toothpaste. A new poll finds Rudy Giuliani's numbers have dropped, meaning there's a new leader in the GOP race for president, and that leader is blank.
Fred Thompson?
No.
No, Mitt Romney.
No. None of the above.
Oh.
A number of readers slammed the New York Times and London.
That's my favorite.
There you are. A number of readers slammed the New York Times and London's Sun newspaper for reviewing blank 2 days before its release.
Harry Potter and the ghastly, deadly Hallows.
Whatever it is. With a loss to the St. Louis Cardinals, the blanks became the first U.S. professional sports franchise with 10,000 losses.
A big sigh of relief in Chicago because it's in... It's in Philadelphia.
It is, the Phillies. The German bus driver threatened to throw a passenger off his bus because she was too blank.
She was too... just too passengery.
You're just passive. You're sitting there. You expect me to do everything. No, he threw her off the bus because she was too sexy.
Oh.
She's too sexy for the bus. Right, according... According to the woman who was wearing a snug top with a plunging neckline, she was sitting quietly near the front when the driver abruptly stopped the bus and shouted, "Your cleavage is distracting me." Hold on, I should do this in a German accent. "Your cleavage is distracting me,
madam.
Every time I look into my mirror and I can't concentrate on the traffic." No more. "If you don't sit somewhere else, I'm going to have to throw you off the bus." So she quickly moved her sexy self out of the driver's eyeline. Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had a great round, 6 correct answers, 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Roy has the lead.
Well done. All right. We have flipped a coin, and Roxanne has elected to go now. So, Roxanne, here you are, fill in the blank. The world's biggest nuclear power plant was forced to shut down indefinitely after an earthquake hit blank.
Japan.
Right. Saying, "I'm finished talking about it," blank snapped when a reporter asked him about his troubled presidential campaign.
McCain.
Right, John McCain. Former Virginia Governor Jim Gilmore ended his blank campaign last weekend.
His GOP presidential campaign?
Yes, he was running. Duke University's wireless network has started crashing because of data overload caused by people using their new blanks.
Apple iPhone thingies.
Right. Unhappy with the Democratic colleague's funding proposal, Alaska Congressman Don Young rose in the well of the House and threatened to blank.
Do somersaults.
No, he threatened to bite him like an Alaskan mink. Bill Clinton said, "I don't think she's trying to be a man," while talking to ABC about blank.
His wife, Hillary.
Exactly. Oprah Winfrey announced that she'd be holding a gala fundraiser for presidential candidate blank.
Obama.
Exactly right. Pagans in Dorset, England are furious because one day they went out to worship next to their ancient giant chalk drawing of a fertility symbol and found blank next to it.
Homer Simpson holding a donut.
Exactly right. Pagans believe that the Cern Abbas giant, an Iron Age chalk drawing of a giant naked man in a, shall we say, happy to see you state, is an aid to fertility. They were a little peeved this week when a giant Homer Simpson appeared in an adjacent field. A local artist was commissioned to do the drawing in biodegradable paint by the studio releasing the Simpsons movie. One local pagan was so annoyed he actually threatened a rain dance, quite seriously, to wash the offensive Homer away. Don't annoy the pagans.
Do not profane their dirty pictures.
Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had a great game, Peter. 7 correct answers, 14 more points. Roxanne now has 17 points and the lead.
Whoa. So how many, then? I love it when this happens, because this is what Adam Felber is born for. How many, then, does Adam Felber need to win it?
He needs 7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
You can do this. Here we go. Fill in the blank, Adam. The board of Dow Jones and Company approved the sale of the Wall Street Journal to media baron blank.
Rupert Murdoch.
Right. International crews could be called to help fight blanks on western states.
Fires.
Yeah, wildfires. A grand jury indicted Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick on charges related to illegal blanking.
Dogfighting.
Right. 11 of the biggest food and drink companies will adopt new rules limiting advertising to blank.
Children.
Right. A rugby player in Australia was found to have had a blank lodged in his forehead for more than 3 months.
Tooth.
Right. An opponent's tooth. For its final season on HBO, blank received 15 Emmy nominations.
The Sopranos.
Right. Because they pose a burn hazard, Hasbro announced that it was again recalling the iconic toy, the blank.
Easy Bake Oven.
Right. A German man who threw a computer out his window escaped a heavy fine because police officers said blank.
Who hasn't wanted to do that?
Exactly. Ooh. Right, Adam. That's the kind of... After neighbors reported a huge crash, police arrived to find a computer smashed in the sidewalk and an extremely frustrated man in the apartment above. Questioned as to why he was disturbing the peace, the man explained that he'd gotten annoyed with his computer and thrown it out the window instantly. Sympathetic police said, well, who hasn't felt like doing that? And only asked the man to clean up the remains of the annoying device. Did Adam do what I just think he did? Did he do well enough to win?
He needed 8 correct answers to win. He had 8 correct
answers. Oh, my Lord! Right.
With 19 points, Adam Felber is district champion.
You've been listening to a rebroadcast of our show from July of 2007, recorded in front of 10,000 people in Millennium Park in downtown Chicago. It was an amazing night under the stars, so much so we're going to do it again on September 4th, 2008, at 6:30 p.m. at the Pritzker Pavilion at Millennium Park on the Chicago lakefront. Admission is free. Hey, why do you think so many people come? Support for NPR comes from the members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners, on the web at realtor.com. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, and the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio, in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern is Becky Silvermans. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our technical director for this broadcast was Robert Newhouse. Other engineers included Gary Yeck, Lorna White, and Jennifer Loeb. B.J. Liederman composed our theme. Our program was directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Emily Ecton and Mike Danforth. The senior producer for this broadcast was Rod Abee. Thanks to Carl Castle, panelists Roy Blunt Jr., Adam Felber, and Roxanne Roberts, I'm Peter Sagal. We'll be back at Millennium Park on September 4th, and we'll be right here on your radio dial next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.